I'm Jeremy Meeks.
I'm David Helm.
I'm K. Edward Copeland.
And this is Preacher's Talk, a podcast for preachers and those who love preaching. Brought to you by Simeon Trust and Nine Marks. Helping you out. Better preaching.
Everywhere.
Help your churches. Everywhere. You can learn about them at simeontrust.org and ninemarks.org. You can drop us some feedback. In fact, today's episode is all about feedback. So in case you were out there wondering, I wonder if they ever read the things we write to them. Yes, we do.
Well, you do.
I do. That's right. Sometimes I send them on to you. I'd love to hear from you. So write us feedback at preacherstalk.org. Sometimes it's like topics that people want us to like, you know, discuss here. But then sometimes they're just kind of questions that don't quite rise to the level of an entire episode. You all have no clue as to what I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
So, here we go. Ed, I'll start with you.
Yeah.
Hey, where do you come up with your illustrations?
Oh, that's a good question. Everywhere I can find them. But right now, my reading, I try to read widely, listen to the radio, what's going on all around the world.
What's a radio? Just kidding.
I know, this is a podcast.
Yeah.
Radio is better than podcast. I try to listen to the people in my congregation in terms of what's going on in their lives. So right now, in this stage of my ministry, those are the three major places. Good. Wide reading, listening, and listening specifically to people.
Dave?
So early, maybe I was 26, 25, Kent Hughes had a whole illustration file and a system with a key where he would, you know, collect them and grow them. This thing got to be about over 1,000.
Yep.
So he let me mimeograph his whole series, so I got a head start. So early on, I was going to a kind of a canned file that was topically oriented, and I would search and then use. I don't do that anymore. In fact, I don't have that anymore. I remember one time I came home from sabbatical and they were talking about illustrations in the back of a van. Kent and I were in the back of a van. We were going on a retreat and somebody talked about, you know, a book of illustrations. Well, while I was gone, I wasn't aware he published a book, 1,001 Illustrations. I wasn't aware. So if somebody's talking about a book of illustration, I go, man, that is a stupid idea. Why in the world would you ever publish a book on illustrations? And Kent looks at me and goes, I just came out with one.
I'd have paid money to be in that car.
You know, insert foot.
Right?
Now the first place I look, I write on my notes while I'm studying, what are the images in my passage and what are the kind of metaphors in the passage? And I actually just kind of note them, bullet point them.
Yep.
And so that I'm trying to mirror illustrations with the kind of ideas that are in play, or at least the pictures that are in play in the passage. And then it's a lot easier for me that way.
Yeah.
They don't always have to come out of a book that I'm reading, or, you know, I'm not saving something for a particular sermon. They somehow emerge.
Yeah. The thing I do is strive to live an observant life.
That's good.
Full of curiosity, right? So I've tried probably 15 dozen times starting a file for all these things. Man, I get like 3 of them in there. I'm like, forget this. I'm not nearly as organized enough. But I don't have to be. I'm essentially always trying to write illustrations, especially like analogies. This is like that. So I'm like, I'm with you, Ed. You know, Cicero one time said he turned down a speaking engagement because he hadn't read much lately.
That is spectacular.
Yeah. But it's just this idea that like if you don't fill yourself up, you got nothing to even meditate on.
That's true.
So as you're just observing different, you know, I'm always trying to look for like 3 funny small things that happen during the day. I'm just putting them up in my brain. I'll forget 99% of them. But if you're about this process all the time, Dave, similar to you, I'm thinking about, you know, if there's images in the text, that could be really helpful. Sometimes, though, there's just like an orienting theme or idea.
That's true.
And I'm just kind of thinking, like, okay, then what's the first thing that comes to my mind about that thing? I'm not looking it up online or whatever. Because, like, I'll be honest, I'm listening to a lot of preachers' illustrations a lot of times, especially opening illustrations or whatever. I'm like, look, dude, you don't know the illustration because you're just looking down and reading it the whole time.
Right.
And you're trying to pronounce Thermopylae or something, right? You're like, wait, you don't know this illustration. This should just be like something alive in you. And it will be much more natural if you're reading, if you're listening to stuff, you're thinking about images in the text. And like, there are no Platonic ideals of illustration.
That's true.
The and best illustrations are the ones that best work for you in this text on the basis of what it's saying.
And they come along the way.
Yeah, they come along the way.
I mean, Spurgeon, illustration wasn't merely a story or a quotation or some image. It was often just anecdotal.
Right.
That's true.
But, you know, so painting the pictures came from a curious mind that knew how to use even nature with ways that would connect with the listener.
Great. Dave, how do you personally grow in preaching by listening to preaching? I'm not necessarily thinking like, what's your habit of listening to sermons? But just, you know, all three of us hear a lot of preaching. And so how are you attempting to grow? How have you found helpful to grow in your own preaching? There's personal edification, all that kind of stuff. Just growing your own preaching is listening to preaching.
So you can listen devotionally, which is, in a sense, you can kind of tune your mind out and absorb what's coming. You can listen analytically. I think growth takes place, well, sometimes in both ways.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take analytical first. As I'm listening to what is being said early in the message, what do I think the connective tissue is? How is that point being developed? What is he doing with the transitions? Is he losing his through line? So when I listen analytically, it comes back to me when I'm trying to prepare my own talk.
Yeah,
right.
And it's strengthening. But I'd also just say devotionally, there are times where I'm just falling almost not, I would say it this way, uncritically under the hearing of the word. My heart is warmed. The subject is right. My affections are in, you know, wired and rolling. And then it helps me to realize, that's soul feeding preaching, and that's what I need to do.
To follow up on what he just said, sometimes good preaching makes you want to preach, or good preaching, if you hear a good sermon, you get like four or five sermons out of that sermon.
Right. Because
you're writing notes, and it just sort of, for lack of a better word, tickles your preaching bone. But for me, back to the analytical piece, I recognize there are some things that I need to grow in or that I'm weak in, and I'm purposely listening to see, okay, how is he closing? Why did that work? Or what didn't work right there? Right. Why didn't it work? Okay, let me make sure I don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if that is working, okay, exactly why is this impacting me so much? What about this is addressing my affections and my will and why is it impacting me? So this critical eye, critical in the sense of analytical, I think is really important, and recognizing that even after I listen devotionally,
right?
Because this is typically what happens with me. Even in the devotional listening, I'll go back and then say, okay, but why did it hit me like that? What is it about that that really was so effective?
And right.
What do I need to do differently so I can get more like that?
Yeah.
But the best preaching, like when you're listening, is when you're like, oh, I'm not taking notes anymore.
Right.
Right.
This is just on me.
Yep. Yeah.
And so how does that develop you as a preacher? I would say it reconvinces me that good preaching is what is going to feed the church.
Right.
So I'm gaining confidence that preaching is the means, as I'm listening to preaching that is the means.
Right. Yeah.
And to Ed's point, and then back to you, but to Ed's point, like good preaching, he said, makes you want to preach. Well, I've heard you also say, and bad preaching will make you want
to preach too. Yeah. Hey, there's no wasted sermons, man. Some of the worst sermons in my life made me want to preach so bad I couldn't understand it. So Plutarch, right? Philosopher, essayist.
Go there.
Has this great essay everybody should read. You can find it free online about listening to lectures. And he says a lot of good things, but two things have stood out to me as it comes to listening to preaching. First of all, the listener is an active participant. He's got a role to play just like a dinner guest at a party. It's the preacher's job to preach. It's your job to listen. So do your job. right?
That's great.
Devotionally, analytically, but do your job. And as a listener, you need to be a charitable listener. I always want the preacher to do well.
Yeah, that's good.
And what he says is super helpful, especially if you're listening to preaching that's maybe outside your camp or outside your particular style. He says very helpfully, you need to be of like utmost charity when it comes to the style.
Interesting.
The just the way it's being preached, and you need to be ruthless with truth.
Oh, that's good.
Mm.
Because he goes, if it's easy to put lipstick on a pig, right, or poison in a beautiful cup. So he's like, look, you need to be concerned about the truth content far more than the way that that truth is presented. Mm. And what he says is, and if the truth content is good enough, then just like taking a drink out of a cup and you're pleased with the drink, you'll sit back and look at the glass, right? So it's fine to appreciate the style if there's something worth drinking inside the cup. So I want to be, and he also says, it's very helpful, that the one who is listening needs to be the most desirous to give words of praise, right? So I'm a charitable listener. I want to praise you. Now, I'm maybe not able to do that. I need to find things to be able to do that.
Right.
And then the one who's preaching should be most desirous to hear the ways he could improve.
Right.
And it's a great balance, right? So I'm a charitable listener, really working hard at listening, wanting this thing to succeed, wanting and listening for truth rather than just style and going like, I'm going to blow this off because it's not how I would do it.
Right.
Okay, give us the name of the thing again.
Plutarch's On Listening to Lectures.
That's great.
Thankfully, you know, it's open source because it's written back in the first century, so you can find it anywhere you want. All right. How much time or thought, Dave, do you put into the wording of your homiletical points?
Mm.
And why?
Yeah, so I do put some real time on that. Those hangers and mm-hmm. the way they're said, the way they have to move together and show logical relationship and progression matter. So for me, I'm not always so much into, what's the thing again where they all have the same?
Alliteration.
Yeah. I don't feel the need to do alliteration, although that's a pretty simple way to keep a message in your own mind.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I feel a greater need for assonance of idea,
mm-hmm.
You know, establishing a global perspective wedded next to something like engaging a global world.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, just, you know, whatever.
Make something up. Yeah.
Now, there are words that are the same, but it's the assonance, it's the movement, it's the balance.
Yep.
And I spend time on the balance of those things.
Yep. Ed?
Yeah, I'm spending way more time than I used to
mm-hmm.
on homiletical piece. I used to spend so much time on the content that the packaging was.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was useless to the congregation. So now I'm trying to find that balance of figuring out, okay, I got the content. I don't need to nerd out on,
right,
you know, all of the Greek and the Hebrew. I got the emphasis. I got the main point. I got my argument. Now, how can I convincingly
mm-hmm.
sort of organize this in ways? And to Dave's point, I've moved away too from alliteration because it was just a habit and it's all right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's useful.
Works,
and,
right?
Yeah, it's useful when it works, but when it doesn't work, it's like, okay, you spent a whole lot of time trying to get the A's to line up.
Right. Congratulations. You can read a thesaurus.
Yeah.
Right.
And it really didn't help the congregation
right.
at all.
Yep.
So I'm spending more time trying to figure out ways in light of the text that's before me,
mm-hmm.
how I can make it work. Sometimes what that means is breaking up the, and I wish I had a good example, but breaking up the, my homiletical line, making each part of the argument
right.
one part of the thing.
Yep. So your second point is building on to your first point.
Yeah. Exactly.
Actually building a sentence.
Yep. Yeah. This actually,
which again works really well when it works, and you can torture a text and beat the congregation to death by forcing it to do that thing. Right. But when it works, oh man, it's so much fun.
So to your point, I think I'm working hard and trying to diversify and not just do the same thing to try to let the text dictate and how the text is coming to me. dictate. Because sometimes a text might have alliteration in it. So you
just go with that.
Easy.
That works. I put it a crazy amount of time into this.
Yeah.
Both in like...
Well, it's one of the reasons you're so clear.
Well, thank you. It's the wording of the thing. Like you're saying, Dave, the logical relationship of the points themselves, how they work together. Can I do them backwards? So it's not only just the wording thing, right? But the wording is helpful. But as I'm thinking about wording, I'm always thinking about the way the wording sounds, not the way the wording reads.
Yep. Mm.
'Cause ain't nobody reading this sermon except me.
That's right? The assonance and the balance.
Exactly.
For me.
Yeah, that it sounds good, right? And that the sounds actually provoke certain things in my head. So like, here's the worst thing. So you could work on the wording really well. This happens in Chicago, of course, on preaching all the time, where you'll have wonderful homiletical points that make sense of the text, make sense logically, and then they just get left on the ground, right? Yeah. So there's if you're going to work hard on homiletical points, use those things.
Right.
I can't tell you the number of times we've given this critique in the preaching lab here at the Chicago course. You gave us a whole lot of bananas and not a whole lot of baskets, right? Like, it's like, here's another one, and here's another one. It's like, where am I supposed to put all this stuff? Like, if you worked hard at these things, use them. Like you said, Dave, hangers. Keep hanging those coats. Keep hanging those hats on the hangers that you gave to us.
Right,
right.
So there's a difference between having the thing and using the thing.
Last thing for me, which is different than what we said, is I work on language that's facing the people.
Amen.
Rather than the exegesis. Well, rather than, you know, Paul... traveled to Corinth. This isn't a real thing, but Paul traveled to Corinth. That's point one. No, actually, my sermon would arrive at something like, God will lead you to where you're going next. You know, so it's you, not so it's today focused, not text. And that's really hard to stay clean on. It takes time to do.
Right.
That's good.
All right. How, Dave, do you deal with having preached what you understand to be a discouraging sermon? So like that you're discouraged with the sermon, right? It might be as you're stepping out of the pulpit. It might be later that day. How do you deal with that?
Mm.
Well, I mean, okay, first of all, let me ask you a more basic question. Are you generally disposed towards discouragement?
Yeah. Well, so fortunately not.
Okay. Helpful to know.
So fortunately, I'm not subject to discouragement, and I know a lot of guys are, so maybe I, but that doesn't mean that I don't regularly come out of the pulpit and feel that was insufficient.
Right.
Or even at times inaccurate or off balance or not executed like I thought it should have been, or that's not going to be used by God to do anything other than get us to the closing hymn.
Right.
You know? So I guess for me, I guess I would encourage guys where that they struggle more with this is, you know, you got to have a short memory.
That's right.
Right.
That's
so
right.
The best shooters in basketball, they got no memory. So Steph Curry, you know, he could miss 5 3-pointers in a row. You give him the ball next time down the floor, it's going. It's going to be airborne. So just have a short memory, keep shooting. And a lot of times I've told you this before, sometimes I'm walking to the back and I just say to myself, well, that was that.
Yeah,
right. That was that. And then other times I think to myself, well, we'll see if anybody comes back next week.
Sure.
Or I'll give it another swing next time.
Right.
Yeah.
So I kind of talk to myself to move beyond it.
Okay.
Yeah.
As quickly as I can. I don't need to go into some half hour sermon review to rehash it all. Most of the times I know it and I just be like, man, that was disappointing.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed in myself.
Mm.
Yeah.
Ed?
So that's a good word, a short memory. And then also I have sort of trained myself, and it's by God's grace. It's because I've been talking to other pastors or preachers with the problem and trying to counsel them. And that is, I don't have the wherewithal to really evaluate how effective something is. I mean, there's been too many times, there's been enough times in my life that this has happened that I can verify that I'm not equipped to evaluate. And that is this.
Right.
I thought I really knocked it out of the park that Sunday and everybody's kind of leaves, nobody sticks around. Right. At our church, right. As you know, if you come to our church,
oh, yeah.
People going to stay around and talk right. like 30 minutes. I yep. preach and they're gone. I'm like, well, okay. Yeah. Then right. another one, I come out, man, what was I thinking? How did that even... Pastor, that was the best.
Oh, yeah, you blessed know, my
man,
life.
When you said that, and I can't even remember the quote they got give nothing. Me, I don't even remember saying that, but it let me know, okay, I'm not in a good enough position to really evaluate how well that went.
Right.
I gave it my best shot. Lord, give me another chance.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, that thing in Paul says, Timothy, do your best.
That's it.
Yep.
And sometimes you come out of the pulpit and you just got to remind yourself, hey, I'm just doing my best.
Right.
I'm going to be okay.
That's it.
But there are other times you need to kind of get on yourself. You need to ride yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You need to tell yourself, hey, man, you got to do your best. And you know that wasn't your best.
Yeah, that's yeah. right.
And you can look back on the week and identify why that there wasn't
you
ready.
Go. There you go.
Yep. I don't remember where it is, but Paul, this gets to your point, Ed, where he's talking about right and wrong standards of judgment. And he's like, I don't pay attention to what you say about me.
Right.
I don't even pay attention to what I say about myself.
Right.
Because that doesn't really matter at the end of the day. It's what God thinks about this that matters. And unfortunately, we don't have access to God's thoughts on our sermons.
That's right.
And like you say, like this is especially for new preachers out there that get discouraged. Man, just keep preaching. Right. Because right. you'll run Amen. Into situations like Ed had where it's like you're discouraged and somebody else it just blessed their life.
That's right.
And there's no reason for it. It's not like, oh, I must be wrong. Like you have objective reasons. You're like, I completely bombed that sermon.
That's right.
And yet God used it in a powerful way. And it's like, okay, well, then there's a difference between what I was trying to get done and what God was trying to get done. So I do need to your point, Dave, I do need to be hard on myself for the sake of ongoing progress in yep. preaching.
That's right.
And yet that sermon I just preached, that sermon is done.
That's
right. That's in the past. And I have imperfect access to the past, right? To quote Augustine, and it's done.
That's
past is past. It used to be the moment, but the moment is over.
Like I said, that was that.
That was that, exactly.
Can I say something about that too? So sometimes you come and it's not that you haven't prepared, but maybe right. you're just feeling
right.
You're just not feeling good. You're just 65%. Yep. You're 75%. Yep. You're like, man, I gave 100% preparation.
Right.
But in my delivery, man, I just didn't have the energy today or whatever. And I've come to realize that sometimes my 65% is sufficient for the hour.
Amen. Right,
for that audience.
Amen. Right.
And God is going to use that. And so I don't beat myself up if, man, I was just tired. I
right.
had a rough week or, right. you know, my right. blood sugar low, whatever
right.
type of thing. If I try to put in the work and preparation, hey, I got to trust you when I get up in the yep. pulpit.
Yep. I think the other thing that can happen, Dave, this is your thing, like some of us do need to be pushed. Let's say that you are discouraged with the sermon. You've been thinking about it. Maybe you've heard back from others about ways to improve it. It can be incredibly encouraging to not spend 20 hours or whatever, but go back to work on it.
Yep.
Just write a few notes, right?
That's
even
right.
if it's just
exactly.
like notes for the next time.
That's right.
Because what's wasted is just feeling bad about it, knowing you could improve, not thinking about how, and then just carrying on and coming back to that text 10 years from now and going like, man, I know I didn't preach this thing real well. I don't remember anything. I've put more like just little footnotes in my sermons.
Right.
So that next time I come back to it, it's like, hey, work on this section. This wasn't real clear or whatever. Then I'm encouraged. And then I'll tell you what, get back on the horse.
Yeah.
You're discouraged with the sermon? Find somewhere else to preach it as soon as you can. Go call the rescue mission and be like, you got any openings, right?
Right.
I need a hot mic right now to go re-preach this thing. Because it could be a very encouraging thing. Like, let's say it's the delivery or whatever. You're like, I know I got this thing.
But let's be clear. Sometimes writing notes is going to help you.
Oh, exactly.
Other times, you should just throw that thing in the trash.
Oh, just throw it away. Exactly. Throw it away. And thank God that that moment existed, right? As painful as it was, right? As discouraging as it was, have a short memory, do your best, and then just like keep preaching. Because here's the thing. Like this is on your worst days, the thing that is generally a discouragement to you about preaching should be the greatest encouragement. That being, these people don't remember my sermons.
That's true. Well, we don't remember.
Exactly.
Okay, so what would Haifman say here? Just last word on that mailbag piece. So a lot of times we go, well, who's sufficient for these things?
Yep.
Corinthians. Mm-hmm. And in our minds, we use that verse and say, well, no one is.
Right, right.
But when Paul says, who's sufficient for these things, he says, we are.
We are. Exactly.
In all that weakness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In all that deliberation, Who's sufficient? You are sufficient.
Right.
So don't do this self-perception pity party.
Just do your best.
Be a man.
Right.
Go about your business.
Carry on.
For more articles, books, and podcasts, please visit 9marks.org.